radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. We'll get some calls here in a second. Later on, Dennis Pitchenbarger is going to be here for the Portland Tribune. Tim Riley returns from the Ministry of Truth. And we have the top five bands who are not Kiss, unfairly overlooked by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles. See? Flawless.
CNN. I didn't want to deafen you. I had to pull it down.
It's okay. CNN radio correspondent. No one noticed. CNN radio correspondent. Jim Roop. Hello, sir.
Howdy.
What's up with you, brother man?
Hey. You know, just itching to look at this new iPhone thing.
All right. That's better than just itching, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, I'll be interested to see what kind of battery life this thing has.
Oh, no, it'll be like the Motorola Q that I have, where the battery runs for about, you charge it for 4 hours, runs for about 9 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you get a whole, like, you are dangerously low. You will lose all of your, plug in now! And then you're running around the office going, has anybody got a USB? Ah, crap, and then it's dead.
Yeah, see, that's my concern, is like, I don't know, man. I got to already charge my cell phone every day.
That's what I'm saying.
I can imagine what this thing's going to be
well,
like.
Well, no, this is a total give you the razor, sell you the blades thing, where this is what it is, and I should say I have this Motorola Q, which is like BlackBerry, and I, you know, I'm happy with it, I like it, but I gotta tell you, I had it about a week, and the first thing I had to do was go buy this extra large honking battery they sell for it for like $800, whatever, it's like 50, but I had to go buy this extra large battery that doubles the thickness of the device and whatever, just because it does so much, and it has like this great brilliant color display, and it makes toast for you and everything, but as a result, battery lasts like 14 minutes. I mean, and they did that. It's like the best of both worlds, because the selling point of this device that I have is that it's really thin and sleek and stylish. So they get to sell it as being a really sleek, stylish device, and then when you realize that comes at the expense of battery life, then they get to screw you for like $70 for the new battery. So it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, this iPhone's about a half inch thick or a quarter inch thick or some crap. I think it looks like a BlackBerry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it what's cool about it is it's all screen. There's no keys on it. So you just touch the screen. And you remember how you used to flip through your albums? You stack them up and you let your fingers walk through the albums?
Yeah.
You do that with this thing, too. You just flip through the album art with your finger, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it'd be neat to play with, but, you know, I'd be out in the middle of nowhere and you can't get a hold of anybody, because unless you're carrying around a big 12-volt battery in a cart, you're going to lose it.
Well, this is the thing that Sarah and I were talking about, where the other thing is like anything that's touchscreen operated, it's like you've got to have like a locking device on it somehow, where every time you adjust your purse or whatever, like I, again, with this thing I have, I keep it in my pocket, and I'm constantly like, and there are no, there's no lock feature on the buttons. And there's no, there's no, like, case for it. And so I will sit on it incorrectly, and I'll inadvertently trigger some function. Like, I'll look down, and I'm like, calling somebody's home, or I've started a game of Minesweeper or something for, and all I really wanted to do was just, like, get my seatbelt, and, and then I'm calling Tom Likas' house by mistake or something. It's all very awkward. So, anyway. But, I mean, the thing is, you know, the Apple, though... I've said this, it's going to end up being like a horse race between Apple and Google to run this world.
I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they team up.
No, it's true, because because Google has got all the technological innovations, Apple has got all the aesthetic innovations, and Apple, of course, has got that legion of zombie-like followers that will just do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's Apple, they'll buy it.
They do that Macworld Expo, and every year is usually the gathering of the faithful, and Steve Jobs stands up there in his black turtleneck and says, "And now you shall buy whatever is underneath door number two." You know, and he opened, and they're like, "Yes, we will buy that." Doesn't matter what it is.
Well, that's what happened today.
I mean, the list of Apple products in the past that were well intentioned but weren't really going to last. Is Legion. Like, I remember Apple selling this. They sold this thing years ago. It was like called the Newton. And the Newton was the Newton, you put that in the hall of failed products. The Newton was this big thing the size of a house that was supposed to be like a text recognition notepad or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is all well and good, except A, it didn't work. B, again, it was like the size of a briefcase. And C, it was like $4 million. And there you go. But, of course, I know all kinds of people who were Mac and Apple enthusiasts. They couldn't wait. They couldn't wait to buy those.
Well,
so.
This is a little nutty. This starts out, the 4 gigabyte starts out at $499 and the 8 gigabyte at $599. So, I mean, this is real. This is a big leap for a lot of your average Joes whose phones already play MP3 files.
Right, especially because they've been selling those MP3 players for a long time, where it's like, I don't know, it's like 150 megs or something, and you know, you can buy it for like $60.
Yeah,
you get it free with a tank of gas or something. So, I don't know. You know, the thing about Apple is Apple's got an. They're following the old business maxim: when you got an advantage, you just press it as far as you can. So,
well. Hey, people will buy it, that's for sure.
Let me ask you this. Is there any word on who's going to replace Bob Barker?
No, not yet.
Because we heard this scurrilous rumor today that we're hoping to God isn't true, that it's going to be Rosie O'Donnell.
No way.
You listen to that, the visceral hatred.
Oh,
listen to that.
God.
That's what I'm saying. Now, trust me, I would like to think that that's not true.
First of all, isn't she under contract with ABC for that other dumb show she's on that she's arguing with Donald Trump over?
Yeah, but that thing's imploding, though.
Yeah, well, they're all arguing with each other, aren't they?
Yeah.
Isn't she under contract with ABC? She can't go to CBS for that.
Who knows? I mean, you know, who's to say? I don't know what's at work.
Why
there,
would
but
CBS want her?
I don't know. I don't think anybody would. But you know, it is hard to say. But it's a horrible and repellent thought.
You know, you got to be almost Art Linkletter type to do a game show. She can't do that. She doesn't have the personality. Well, she doesn't have the people skills for a game show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A, she comes off as a real bitch, and B, the thing about that show is to host a game show successfully, and the best example of this, other than Barker himself, is probably Pat Sajak.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, you got to have a certain blandness. And I don't say that even in a bad way, but it's like you can't be too full of zing and vim and vigor and pep because it burns people out. Those shows are meant to be sort of comforting and sort of soothing, and you can't be that way if you're just a nutcase.
See, Bob Barker and Pat Sajak realize it's not the Bob Barker and Pat Sajak show.
Right.
It's whatever their show is, and the idea is to make the people on it the star.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's they learned the lesson of Monty Hall, which is that to let the audience be nuts, you got to be stable.
Yeah.
And Rosie O'Donnell is just too. She's just a little. She's a little shrieky.
She ain't a little nothing.
Zing. All right. And so, if you hear anything about that, you let us know. But I hope that it's just a horrifying rumor.
Me too.
All right.
I don't ever watch that show, but
no.
It would die for sure.
Well, the thing about that show is there are three phases of Price is Right watching. There's when you're really young and like you're at home with your mom and your mom is watching or whatever, you're around the house. There's when you're a college student and you're hungover or high or sleeping it off or skipping class and just sitting there in your underwear. You're like your strawberry shortcake pajamas eating the cornflakes watching Price is Right. And then C, when you're old and sitting in your own waste. That's it. Those are the three times in your life when you watch The Price is Right.
Then there's us.
Yeah, and then there's you and I who just punditize about the other three, my
there
friend.
You go.
So keep your ear to the ground. By the way, speaking of keeping one's ear to the ground, apparently the deal with Lisa Goddard is that she had discovered some story that she thought was newsworthy, but that CNN did not. And at the same time, the CNN had some story that they thought was great that she thought was just pap.
It does. It happens with me all the time.
Well, see, but I mean, you and I have developed just the great ability just to bend and to not really care.
Well, because as long as I can go to the bank twice a month, I'm a happy man.
That's what I'm saying. Standards are for other people.
That's right.
Standards are for people with job security. But she apparently got into some sort of kerfuffle with the CNN people about it being told that to do some crap that they were trying to pass off as news, and she wasn't having it. So, So there you go. So there's that. But she did make several Caligula references today, and so
kidding me.
No.
I'm liking her more and more.
That's what I'm saying. So there you go. So it does appear to all be good, my brother.
All right.
Enjoy your day. Jim Roop in Los Angeles.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That's Jim Roop. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get Aaron here in just a second. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. You know what the funniest part of that remote you did up at the baseball game was?
No. What?
The fact that there was a guy on a Segway, and you guys wanted to chase him down and ride it.
Oh, I forgot all about that. You're right. There was a Segway dude there.
The whole show consisted of you guys. Is he coming around the corner? Is he coming? And weren't you guys also, like, on the backside of the stadium, and there were no people around you?
Well, there were people who were. I don't really remember because I don't really know the layout of that station of the stadium. I'm not really a baseball enthusiast. There were some people there because there were old men standing in front of us, wondering really confusedly who the hell we were and why we were there. And we didn't have a good answer for them, of course. Our response was just to kind of go, "Well, Would you like a sticker? You know,
I
have a sticker.
That was one of the funniest shows, only because you guys, no offense to you guys, were so uncomfortable, and you could hear it in every statement you made was, why are we here? What are we doing here?
Because it made no sense, because, you know, broadcasting a show that nobody can hear.
Seriously.
That is the dumbest thing.
And really, what possible reason would there be for having Tim and I anchoring a baseball game? I think there's one of two things. Either A, they just didn't believe us when we tried to lay out how little we knew about sports and how we were not sports people. They just thought we were kidding. Or B, and this is what I suspect in retrospect is the real reason, B is that they had already sold the remote. They had already sold it to somebody, and they were contractually obligated to do it, and we were just the only live show there. And so it just landed on us by default.
I always wanted to know why Matt didn't go with you guys.
Well, because Matt had to stay back at the studio and run the board flawlessly, as he always did.
The only one that had any semblance of, you know, sports knowledge.
And that would have made too much sense. It would have made too much sense to actually have the baseball fan go to Seattle. No. Why not send the two guys who never leave their homes?
I wish you could play some of your old stuff, like on Saturdays or something, like the one where you tried to hook up the couple, like back in the Midwest or something when you were syndicated.
Oh, I remember that. Boy, that was a lawsuit waiting to happen. I don't know what the hell I was thinking there.
Those were so funny. I had to quit work early so I could just sit in my car and listen because they were so funny.
So you're the
he was
one.
Your listener.
You're the one. You're the guy who actually liked the national show. You're the one person.
I get on my knees and pray to everything holy that someday you end up on satellite, but you get a bigger audience.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Who knows? All right, John, thank you. You spread the word. You call us anytime, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's John. Yeah, boy, I don't know what I was thinking when I did that.
What did you try to do?
I was on, you know, I did this stupid syndicated version of the show years ago, and I was on in a bunch of cities that don't really matter, cities like Fayetteville, and no offense to people in Fayetteville, but not cities of real renown, and I had some woman call up. And it sounded like a fake call, but it turned out that she wasn't faking. It was real. Some woman, and she was just a whole lot of like, well, I can't find a man or whatever. And we kind of talked to her, and she sent us a photo. And she was cute. She was really cute. She was like, I don't know. She's like, I don't really want a relationship. I just want something. And this is before, like, you know, internet dating. I think it was just kind of coming of age. There was no, like, whatever, like Craigslist or whatever. And so it was just a lot of, well, where can I find a guy to just, like, come and, like, F me? And I'm like, well, we could probably find somebody, ha, 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 you know, I say, just sort of like, oh, you'd have no trouble. And then, of course, I look down, and there's just guys calling in from all over the country, like, I'll go give it to her. And it was just one of those things that just suddenly, like, was happening, where, because she was really into it. She's like, well, these guys sound cute, hook me up. And so we just ended up, like, and it was ridiculous. It was where, like, she was in, like, Arkansas. I don't even know what states were, but it was, like, three states that were sort of, like, in a row. It was like Wyoming, Colorado, Arkansas. Like three states that are somehow in a row, but, you know, in the same general area, but are not, like, connected to each other. And it was like she was in Arkansas, and there was, like, a guy in Colorado, and then, like, they met in Wyoming or something. And they arranged to meet at some hotel in Wyoming and, like,
what?
Get it on or whatever. And it was just the weirdest thing, and I don't even know what I was thinking. Because the guy totally could have been, the guy totally could have just cut her into pieces and put her in a trunk and sunk her at the bottom of a quarry. I have no idea what was going on in my head when we thought it was a good idea to send her to a Wyoming hotel room with some guy that we didn't know. That's the sort of behavior that's the sort of radio that we no longer do. The Emerson Show no longer engages in that kind of chicanery. Because I just hated that show so much, and it just sucked, and I was just praying every day that they would cancel it. And so I just didn't even care. I mean, in a way, it was sort of liberating towards the end, because I just didn't care at all. I didn't care. Didn't care if I did a bad job, a good job. Didn't care if we were responsible. Didn't matter, because I just hated every day at that job. So no disrespect to the people who liked that version of the program, but there's something really wrong with you, because it was awful. So anyway. All right, well, let's get this, and then we'll break. We'll come back with Tim Riley, and we'll do the top five. Aaron.
Hey, I got three possibilities for Bob Barker.
Okay.
Number one, John O'Herlihy, you know, all the old ladies like him.
He's dead, isn't he?
No, this was a guy that was on, the first run of that Dancing with the Stars or whatever.
Oh, I'm thinking of Dan Herlihy. No, okay, John O'Herlihy. Oh, yeah, okay.
And then the second one would be some putz like, you know, Nathan Lane. You know, I could see that.
Nathan Lane. I could totally see Nathan Lane doing that.
Now, my ideal one, this is a complete fantasy here. I can just see some 300-pound, you know, Nordic woman from Wisconsin charging up on stage and wrapping herself around none other than our own Tim Riley.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's fantastic. I mean, really, like anybody but Rosie. That's kind of be my motto from now on. Doesn't matter, anybody but Rosie O'Donnell. Nathan Pretty Lane, though, no, I think you're onto something there. And the ladies love Nathan Lane. They do. Like older, sort of frigid housewife types, they love him.
Oh, yeah.
Unthreatening is the word for Nathan Lane. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Aaron. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with Tim Riley to Ministry of Truth. Then we'll do the top five rock bands who are not Kiss, who've been overlooked by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Coming up, breaking news right here. Breaking news from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Moments, Tim Riley joins us for the Ministry of Truth with breaking news here. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Dennis Schwitzenberger will be here from the Fuel Show. And another exciting installment of the Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. Plus the top five most unfairly overlooked bands that aren't Kiss. Vis-a-vis the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. He's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Breaking news. The first wave of additional U.S. troops will go into Iraq before the end of the month under Bush's new plan. That release from a senior defense official, so it doesn't matter what you want, really. The date for this, is January 31st. Up to 20,000 troops will be put on alert to be prepared to deploy under the president's plan, but the increase in forces on the ground will be gradual. Moving first will be the 2nd Brigade, 82nd Airborne Division, which is in Kuwait right now, and poised to deploy quickly into Iraq. So, regardless of what anybody wants, he's going to do as he pleases.
So, that's because he's the decider. So, there you go.
As far as the president's address to the nation tomorrow, which is entitled The Way Forward, the president will stress the importance of victory in Iraq, says Tony Snow.
I think millions of Americans believe that this war is winnable. And think furthermore,
it is important to
rebuild the sense of political unity. One of the things the president's often said, it's the only way we lose is if we lose our will.
We already did.
No one thinks that. Yeah, the will is gone.
Time ago.
As B.B. King might have said, the will is gone, we're done, we're finished. We should just say, show of hands in the country right now. We're ready to leave. We've moved on. We no longer care. We now are speaking for everything. No one is...
We're busy talking about Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump.
Yeah, our attention has...
That is the national psyche.
We have exhausted our attention span for Iraq. We're ready to call it a day. The only people who are really concerned about this being some sort of... look, we've already... It's not like we were batting 1,000 before anyway. You know what I mean? It's like we've... it's not like we don't have one in the lost column already. We've already lost a war in the past. Doesn't matter. It's no longer... It's not like it's going to be the first time, you know, so everybody is the only people who are hung up on that are the administration. We're ready just to cut our losses and call it a night.
Tony still ponders on how the big presidential address might be received.
I know it's tempting to think, boy, this is going to set off a big old political firestorm, and it very well may. But on the other hand, it may actually set off a period of reflection and constructive activity, and that would be a good thing as well.
No, nothing constructive about this.
That's not going to happen. Yeah, because there is no construction that will come out of this. There is nothing constructive. There is no upside. There is nothing positive. There is no growth. There is no gain. There is no goal. There is no success that will come out of this in any way, shape, matter, manner, or form. None.
Zero. Just to add to the craziness, John Kerry has maintained a decidedly low profile, following his self-described run-in with the midterm elections. I mean, he concluded that Kerry's silence meant he had given up his dream. But no!
For the love of God!
He's preparing to run again. That's all we're going to say. As is Al Sharpton. As if we don't have enough problems out there.
No, that's okay. See, Al Sharpton, now that's a step forward. That's a positive step forward, is Al Sharpton joining the race. Because that guy is worth his weight in material.
Maybe he could be the running mate with Barack Obama.
Oh, you know, it doesn't matter. I'd totally vote for Al Sharpton just to screw with things. Just to screw with the established order of things, I would vote for Al Sharpton in a heartbeat. Doesn't matter. And you'd vote for him over John Kerry. I know you would. Everybody would. It's because John Kerry... I was talking to my friend Nate about this the other day, that it's like there's no... We're talking about politics, and I don't know anybody who liked John Kerry. No one. I know people who didn't like George Bush. I know people who wanted to vote for somebody who was not George W. Bush. I don't really know anybody that went, John Kerry, that's a man. I really admire what he stands. He speaks for me. He speaks for no one. He's Treebeard. No one understands anything about that guy. Screw him.
Time for a penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for
take a look
Tuesday.
At my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away.
Ba-dum-bow.
I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Ba-dum-bow-bow.
I have quite a few of these.
I'm sorry?
These penises have been building up. A woman outraged by her husband's unwillingness to make love to her wrapped up his penis with scotch tape and tried to force him into sexual intercourse. Her plan failed because...
Because of the scrapiness, I would imagine.
Well, the woman wrapped her husband's hands, legs, and head with the tape and went to bed.
Oh,
the
I
man
see.
Died from suffocation.
Okay. Well, here's your problem right here.
This occurred in Bashkirpushchan, which is in central Russia, in the village of Shenemetyevbash. Investigators report the 28-year-old had been partying with her friends the day and came home and she threw a tantrum in front of her husband and son. The latter told the police afterwards that his mother had come home late and she'd been clearly drinking and tried to force his daddy to sleep with her. But the man flatly rejected. Outraged, the woman began to beat him savagely and forced him to take off all his clothes. The 10-year-old tried to protect his father, but the woman hit the kid so hard he passed out.
Good God almighty. Mm-hmm. What kind of savages are these?
Having dealt with the boy, the woman reportedly wrapped up her husband's penis with scotch tape and trying to have sex with him, but failed. The woman then wrapped up her husband entirely with adhesive tape, sealing up his mouth and nose.
How much scotch tape do they have in Russia? That's a lot of scotch tape.
Well, that must have been a big Christmas gift.
Hello, Vladimir. I've given you a great gift of cellophane tape. So, she started by... Look, I'm no scientist. But it does seem, it seems like, I'm speaking now clinically, as a journalist, scientifically now, as part of this news segment on this news program and the yes. public interest, convenience, and necessity, I'm saying it seems like if your husband is if he's not in the mood, not responsive, one might say, and you then deal with that by wrapping his member in scotch tape, mm-hmm. that, it seems like, doesn't solve the problem. As it stands, so to speak. It doesn't... That doesn't really address the issue. All that's going to result in is some chafing, I would think. And then there's a whole lot of, well, the wrapping of the head. I guess that just ended. What, is he dead?
Well, she claimed that he was just faking it, but no, he's dead.
No, he's really dead, baby. He did long time. Okay, well, there you go. So don't wrap a guy's mouth in duct tape. That's the lesson today.
Then comes word, this from North Carolina... A woman attacked a man in his genitals during a Christmas party, injuring badly, enough that he needed 50 stitches. Rebecca Arnold Dawson was charged with malicious castration in a fight early Tuesday at a party hosted by the 38-year-old man's girlfriend. All three were heavily intoxicated, said Chief Frank Powers. Dawson was accused of wrapping the man's genitals, grabbing them. Police said a weapon was not used. He declined to elaborate. I believe he needed more than 50 stitches to repair the damage, but is back home at this point. All I can tell you is that the injury was done with her hands.
I'm thinking Lee press on nails.
She does not have a listed phone number. State law describes malicious castration as cutting off, maiming, or disfiguring a person's genitals with the attempt to hurt or render the victim impotent. Part 4. Indian surgeons have successfully reattached a man's penis after it was sliced off by gangsters. The organ was completely severed, was functional during clinical tests this week, said the plastic surgeon R.K. Kazanchi at the state-run Sir Gangaram Hospital in the Indian capital. It is a rare operation and the first case of reattachment of a completely amputated penis in New Delhi, he bragged, adding that the victim reached the hospital 6 hours after his penis was cut off. He even carried it to the hospital in a plastic bag. It was done under high magnification using an operational microscope. The doctor who declined to identify the 28-year-old patient by name said the man, a bachelor, would recover in about 3 months. He could have a normal married life but will experience no sexual dysfunction. No details on how the crime occurred.
There's got to be some mental trauma that comes along with having to carry your penis in a bucket.
I think it was a plastic bag.
It was a plastic bag, like at the airport.
So much the worse. Because you know that he probably didn't have the bag handy.
No.
That's and you can never you can never find those things when you need them either. And it probably wasn't the Ziploc kind that to sort of keep things. Why? What is that on your screen over there?
Hmm?
What is that? Who is that?
A very beautiful man.
Okay.
That's the guy, I guess, that Britney Spears was seen hanging out with yesterday.
Right. Oh.
I'm just saying that he had to, you know, he probably couldn't find a bag, and then you got to get it. It's like borrowing a cup of sugar from the neighbors, and then there's the and then walking down the street carrying your penis in a bag. That's just no good. That'll come back to you when you've been drinking at night.
All right. Do we have one more?
Yes, we do.
Fantastic.
This comes to us from Oklahoma. Convicted penis pump judge Donald Thompson thinks he should collect $7,789 a month pension, even though he's sitting in prison serving a sentence for masturbating while presiding over jury trials, including a murder case. The Oklahoma Public Employees Retirement System had issued a ruling to withhold Thompson's retirement benefits after he pled guilty in June to four counts of indecent exposure. Thompson is appealing his convictions and continues to maintain his innocence. He claims the penis pump was a gag gift for his 50th birthday from a friend and despite witnesses' accounts.
The words penis pump and gag should...
Claims he never used it and the sentence is too harsh. He filed a motion to remain free pending appeal, but it was denied.
All right, so there you go. And we'll skip the... You know that in Oklahoma there was the obligatory, like, you know, blah, 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 size matters of his pension. That's we're done. There's your penis watch.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
God almighty. Let's do a couple more here and then we'll do the top five.
Well, according to a USA Today /Gallup poll, twice as many people expressed support for the comeback of, guess who? Whitney Houston over Britney Spears.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's all relative.
32% also hope that Tom Cruise would have a comeback soon.
No, they don't. No, they don't. No one anywhere wishes that. No one anywhere, ever.
41% want Whitney to come back. Only 17% want Spears to return. In life, Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal was among the most famous Jews of the 20th century. In death, he wound up on a list of people eligible to be baptized as Mormons, as so they could enter heaven. Following a protest from Jewish groups, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said it removed Wiesenthal's name from the International Genealogical Index, a database of names for people who could be baptized after death.
You know, Mormons, they have to get their hands slapped over and over about this. This is like the fifth time they've had to be told not to do this. There was a big tiff that happened a couple years ago. I'm going to play that one again later just because it amuses me. There was a brouhaha that happened a few years ago where the Mormons were baptizing Holocaust victims. And a bunch of Jewish organizations came in and were like, stop. Not stop that now, more crazy Mormons. And the Mormons were like, okay, we stopped. We're not doing it anymore. We're done.
So apparently there's an inbox for this.
No, there is. Here's the weird thing. You, all of you within the sound of my voice, you, Tim Riley, you, Sarah Dillon, me, John, Big Tree, all of us, when we're dead, will be baptized by the Mormon Church. All of us. Someday, you will be baptized into the Mormon Church without consent, without permission. It will happen. That's their thing. That's why they're so... This is not crazy talk. This is like their deal. That's why the Mormons are so into genealogy. Because it is their belief as handed down, blah, 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 Joseph Smith, blah, 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 golden plates and a hat, no one can see them but me, ha, ha. That you have to be baptized or you can't get into heaven or the celestial kingdom, as they call it. And that's why they're... The Mormons are really savvy. Joseph Smith, huckster though he was... The great thing about Joseph Smith is that it was sort of a modern hucksterism in that he anticipated some of these logical questions that people always have, like, well, could God create a rock so heavy he couldn't lift it, huh? You know, he sort of anticipated some of these logical queries, and he thought around them in advance. Because the big, like, you know, there was that thing I always used to ask the nuns when I was in Catholic school. I'm like, well, what about some guy who grows up on a desert island and never hears about Jesus? Can he get into heaven? And, you know, whatever. And Joseph Smith, you know, you'd always say, well, what about people who aren't baptized? That's why the Mormons are so into genealogy, into family trees, because they do retroactive baptisms. They do baptisms for the dead. And so Lara did this when she was growing up. She would go to the... you go to the temple and they give you like a list of names. Like, here's who you're baptizing today. And it's like some guy died 50 years ago and you do like a proxy baptism for him in the temple. And it's always, there's always like, a little bit of competition, like when somebody on their list, like you get a celebrity or whatever. And I think there was some scandal years ago when, like, Hitler finally came, like, after they got to the H's, and it was like, Hilter, and who was it? Adolf Hitler. John, you, you know, and they gave it to some guy. Some guy had to baptize Hitler into the church. So all of us, after we're dead, we will be baptized into the Mormon faith. That's just the way it works. And so forth. Bam, because they're crazy. Here's Tim Riley.
So is there a desk for every letter in the alphabet that somebody works on this on a daily basis?
I'm not really sure how it works, but there's guys who, I mean, they're Mormons in, I'm making it sound like there's some...
But do they hire temps to do this?
I'm making them sound like a crazy cult. But no, Mormons in every city, in every town that comb through databases, historical records, newspapers, county archives to get birth certificates, death certificates.
Wait, so do they baptize you at your grave?
No. They do it in a temple and they do it by proxy. It sounds crazy.
How do they get you?
So let's say it's 100 years in the future. You're dead. Mormons go through, I mean, they do it now with computers, obviously, but I mean, but for people that were born hundreds of years ago, again, they go and look through family Bibles for, like, deaths and births that were written down and whatever. So someday, like in 2100, your name will come up. They'll just be going through, you know, year by year, and they're like, 2080, Sarah Dillon, dead. And they'll take your name and whatever to the temple, and there will be somebody who will be a stand-in for you that will, like, get all the, you know, the dunking and the oil and the water and the, hey, you're baptized. But she'll be doing it, I swear to God, she'll be doing it, like, via proxy for you. There's probably some clever analogy here.
That's crazy.
I think
you described it pretty well.
Yeah, but that's totally what it is. And it's like she is like the physical person that they're baptizing, but it's being done via proxy for you. And again, this is a couple years ago. They were just like, you know, they had this whole list of Holocaust victims. And who were, it seemed, probably pretty happy with the religion that they had. They had no problem with it. But the Mormons decided that they needed to be Mormon and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, anyway. And so forth. And I think we're done. Let's do one more, and then we'll do the top five.
Well, all right.
The point is they're nutty.
This comes to us from Florida.
I was a little Bobcat Goldthwait there.
A confrontation between a costume Tigger and a child at Walt Disney World has led to a sheriff's investigation and the suspension of the character, which is grabbing national headlines and featured on CBS's The Early Show. The incident occurred over the weekend when Jerry Monaco of New Hampshire and his family visited Disney's MGM Studios. During a photo op with Tigger, the man in the costume, Michael J. Fenneman, was videotaped apparently throwing a punch at Monaco's son, Jerry Jr.
Have you seen the photograph or the video?
I've seen it.
Of the Tigger hitting the kid? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
They're like posing for a photo, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, whap, like Tigger punches the kid full on in the face. It's gold. It's fantastic.
Now, Monaco said he took his son to the hospital Saturday to be treated for the alleged hit. So what kind of a kid is this?
It's not an alleged hit. There's a photo of it. There's a photo of Tigger punching the kid in the face. That's not alleged anything.
So he said, as we were posing for pictures, and I attempted to get in the shot with Tigger, when he stuck his arm out, and I figured the photographer would get a shot with me and my two little guys, said the father. At one point, he started bumping into me, so I started apologizing to him, and I figured I could get out of his way because I figured it was hot out, and I would give him more space. So, at that point, I backed off, and I went to take some home video for the rest of the family with him, and that was when you see what happened in the video. Out of nowhere, he ended up clocking my son. He sucker-punched him. Some were calling the punch an accident. Others said the video retaliation by the Tigger character is intentional. In a statement made by the sheriff's office, Fetterman said he was acting in self-defense. He claims the child was pulling on his costume, causing him to lose his breath.
Well, that's probably true, though. I mean, you were a mascot. You know the kids are little bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Probably kicking him in the groin and so forth.
Yep. You don't come here for this, says Monaco. Disney is supposed to be a safe place. This is supposed to be a place where you come to spend time with your family. How could they hit my son? Well, pretty hard, said the victim. I can still feel it, even though he was wearing padded gloves.
Excellent. Fantastic. There you go. And you know, the thing is, like, anything that happens at Disneyland, Disney World, it's all on film.
Yeah.
Anything that happens there is captured. So this guy was just either really wasn't thinking straight, or he really was being provoked by the kid, because it goes without saying that anything that happens at any of those places is captured on film. Mm-hmm. Everyone sees it. So, yeah, so if you get a chance, I would look up this video of Tigger punching the kid in the face. It really is. It's very gratifying on several levels. No, it really is. It's fun for the whole family. All right. Let's see. Do we have the top? Tim, do you have the top five?
I do, yes.
All right. Let's roll this, ladies and gentlemen. For Tuesday, here is your top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting is the best thing to do. Counting is happiness.
Counting is ecstasy.
I love to count.
Don't you?
Don't you?
Fantastic.
And as the doddering reptiles at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame roll out their annual list of losers, dope fiends, and never were's, we take a moment to reflect on how totally, truly, and completely out of touch these geriatric arbitrators of rock enshrinement really are. Why, there's no better way to ascertain their level of relevance than to list these to top five eligible artists who are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not counting Kiss. With honorable mention going to Joan Jett.
Really, it's inconceivable. It's inconceivable that Joan Jett's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, there's been... Look. That's me. That's my editing mistake. That's my bad. Especially, regardless of how you feel about Joan Jett, even if you're not a big Joan Jett fan, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tries so desperately to look inclusive and broad, which is why they have Bob Marley in there. That you figure just for the tokenism factor, they'd love to have Joan Jett in there. But no. The idea that Bobby Darin is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and this isn't, it just makes no sense at all. None. Zero. It was really tempting to put the Monkees on this list, by the way. I did not, but I should have. This song really defines the term instant classic. This is one of those songs that was number one like the day it came out, and it seemed like it was number one for like 100 years. Kind of bizarre to think that there was a time when this song didn't exist. That there was a time in American history when no one had sung a song called I Love Rock and Roll. It's a little obvious. It's amazing that it took like 25 years to get it. She's like a female Ramone. And she not only is eligible herself, but the Runaways are eligible. And the Runaways ought to be in there, too, because without the Runaways are totally the prototypical girl punk group. The Runaways who gave us Joan Jett and Lita Ford. Great song. All right, it's Tim Riley.
And number five, the Meatloafs.
Only one of the biggest selling records in the history of recorded music.
Well, I remember every little thing as if it happened only yesterday. Walking by the lake and there was not another car in sight.
The idea that Meatloaf isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is actually offensive to me. Especially when you consider that all the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame judges just wet themselves over Springsteen. And I don't hate Bruce Springsteen, but I mean, you know, all of those rock critics have their what's that?
He's almost 60 years old.
Yeah, I know. And the rock critics, they just, you know, they just get themselves all a quiver. They get their loins in an uproar over Bruce Springsteen constantly. And Meatloaf really is, in many ways, like all the best things about Bruce Springsteen boiled down into one fantastic record. I mean, Bat Out of Hell really is like the best record that Springsteen never made. If you think I'm wrong about that, you listen to like, You took the words right out of my mouth and then listen to like Hungry Heart back to back. I mean, these were all honorary Springsteen songs, really. And I mean that as a compliment. But done bigger and better and badder and bolder. And you got to give it up to a guy like Meatloaf, who's like the world's least likely rock star. Especially, look at him, he weighs like 5,000 pounds. And he's singing 7-minute songs with like these weird Wagnerian operatic introductions. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd. And yet it's freaking great. Gonna let this go for a second. You tell me this isn't rock and roll. I mean, come on. Come on!
Baby, don't you hear my heart? You gotta drown it out the radio. I've been waiting so long for you to come along and have some fun. Well, I gotta let you know.
No, you're never gonna regret it.
So open up your heart.
Fantastic. Here's the top five of Tim Riley.
Number four, Iggy Pop.
Iggy Pop of Iggy and the Stooges. This is my favorite Iggy Pop song from the Raw Power album. The finest garage band ever to have existed that's not the Kingsmen. God, what a great song this is. Produced by David Bowie, I think, this record. And it's just got this intentionally really distorted, fuzzy, overdriven sound. Sounds like a mistake. Greg and I, what was it that time Greg and I were at that strip club? It was for that intercom, the Turn It to 11 meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It was like you and me and Greg from NRK, 90, whatever they're called. And we...
And drinking this, beer early in the afternoon watching Naked Lady.
Totally. And this is the this was the CD on the jukebox that Greg and I could agree on, was the Raw Power CD. Fantastic. Counting down the top five artists not in the Hall of Fame.
Number three, Cheap Trick.
How wrong is that?
Very wrong.
How wrong on hundreds of levels is it that Cheap Trick isn't in the Hall of Fame?
It is wrong.
I mean, the 70s arena, but never sold out, never, except for The Flame. Never became bad, never became a joke, never became a parody, continue to write great music, continue to tour. They're a working man's band. They continue to work. They're on the road like 50 weeks out of the year, and they're fantastic. Now the top five bands not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not counting Kiss. Tim Riley.
Number two is Rush.
I apologize for using this lackluster live recording. I forgot to bring my copy of 2112 with me. This is from last year, so Geddy Lee's voice is terrible. He sounds like a bad drag queen in this recording. Neil Peart's still playing well there, but boy, Geddy Lee's voice, this sounds so awful. He really sounds like a bad Liza Minnelli. Worst version of the song I've ever heard. And I love the song. And this is like, this is like terrible Rush karaoke. He sounds like a squeaky voice teen from The Simpsons.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not supposed to give any refunds without a manager's approval.
Let's move on from the counting of the top five rock acts not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not counting Kiss.
Number one, Alice Cooper.
Fantastic. Where the hell did I put? There we go. Alice Cooper, who, if one skips over Screaming Jay Hawkins, probably, you know, has to be credited with the acorn from which the Mighty Crew really did create it as it exists now. Created an entire genre of rock that did not exist before. Doubly cool because he was a preacher's son. You're an Alice Cooper fan.
I am.
And a great rock and roll growl at one time, too. Boy, that's still a lot of them. 30 years old, too. back after this with Darren, who's got his own mascot punching story. Dennis Pitzenbarger from The Fuel Show. Like us at 3. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.